Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Hidden from History. I am the guest host. My name is Reginald Angusarcu. We have with us in the studio today Mr. Wes Pidgeon. We also have Carol Martin with us. We're going to continue talking about the foster care system here in British Columbia. Wes, I recently had a chance to listen to when you went to the RCMP depot over in, detachment over in Burnaby. And when I was listening to it, all I was hearing was the RCMP kept on doing a runaround with you, where you were talking about the fact that telling them, look at the paperwork. And they're trying to say, well, no, we want to talk to this certain person. I was going to play that audio, however, is due to privacy laws. I cannot play it because then I'd have to cut this person's name out. And then I don't want to tamper with what was said because it was really explosive. And if you could talk a little bit about how the RCMP were playing that game with you and which RCMP were involved in that.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because we can rewind it a bit. This is a cat and mouse game that's been going on for years there. In fact, a lady named Ann Mayo, who worked in that psych ward with me, and again, Google Ann Mayo's name, Vancouver Province, Vancouver Sun, etc. She's consistently writing letters to the editor talking about how great this provincial government is, but she never identifies that she's actually an employee. She used to be John Narani's assistant, Burnaby-Willingdon District. She's one of the people that first started saying there's abuse in that psych ward. You can't get a word out of Ann now. She won't say anything. So I sit there trying to talk to the RCMP about these concerns. And again, like I say, cat and mouse. Before the last election, and understand Ann Mayo, she actually told the liaison officer at the Maples about these concerns, and nothing. He goes, oh yeah, I suspect this stuff's all going on here. Never did a thing about it. I'm talking to the RCMP, and they're giving me the runaround, and this has been going on for a couple of years now. Before the last provincial election, I get a call out of the blue from Constable Connor Johnson. He wants to see me on a Sunday night. He phones me about 4 in the afternoon, and I said, I got to rush into the city for this. Can't we do it another day? No, it's my last day on, and I got 4 days off. And he's eager to get me in. So, of course, I rush into the city. And it sure looked like it was some kind of a fact-finding mission. And one of the first statements I said, who called you? I kept trying to say, we need to talk about the politicians that wouldn't do due diligence and protect these children, because that is against the law. He goes, we're not going to talk about the politicians. Well, why wouldn't you do this? So fast forward, all of a sudden, we start getting a little more of them sniffing around, put a little more pressure on them. And this is leading up to this tape that you're talking about. So I take one of the reporters in with me, and before I go, I said, can I bring someone to sit in the room as a witness? Oh, yeah, no problem. I get there, and all of a sudden they're saying, no, you can't take someone in here.
That was someone from the Agora newspaper.
Absolutely. Right? And they're saying, no, he can't come in. And I said, well, you told me he could. No. He said, they keep telling me, if you want to see this, make a Freedom of Information request for these tapes. Well, why would I have to make a Freedom of Information request if I'm the guy that's actually in the room talking? So while I'm in the room talking, and this is where it comes down to, how do you trust these guys? We know that these things happen because it's in the papers daily, problems around our police forces.
One thing that really caught me about the recording is when you kept on saying, look at the paperwork, it's in black and white, right? And then the RCMP, whoever the RCMP was, all of a sudden, they're saying to the fact is that they start talking about this one particular gentleman that was involved with a youth who's now an adult. And with this gentleman, and then they're basically throwing out the word, well, there's, you know, about the evidence. Yet we had a survivor of the Maple Center sitting right across from me, right next to you, not even 2 weeks ago. His name was Dan. First name's Dan. And Dan was confirming everything that you were saying about the Maple Center, and yet the RCMP's talking about evidence? It's there, plain as day.
Sure. Well, when they're saying, we want to go talk to this individual if we can find him, well, you can look at your own paperwork. The incident when he actually dove off the overpass and neglect, and now you want to talk to him. Several years later, he was in distress at the time. What is his recall going to be? Every single thing that happened is in black and white on paper. and it's current. It was written exactly at the time that it happened. Then the paperwork's there for months. So if that paperwork is missing, that's against the law. You want to disappear this paperwork, like some of the stuff has already happened. That's going to be at least 6 months worth of paperwork, daily reports, which are minimum three times a day. And you're going to say that none of this existed? That's the exact RCMP office that had to respond to that particular incident.
And who was the superintendent that was on? You were telling me about the superintendent's name, a sergeant.
The second time I went in, when we're going in, and this is where you're coming with the tape, his initials are F.F. Ahmed, A-H-M-E-D. And I tell you, they wouldn't let the reporter in with me. They didn't know he's a reporter. So I said, I need to go outside and have a talk with him. He handed me his tape recorder. And then I walked back in because as I'm inside, he's asking the receptionist, what is the process for freedom of information? And she says, there will be the RCMP, anything they say will be deleted. And they can also black out anything that they want.
And this is supposed to be a free society?
You're supposed to protect children?
Yeah, protect and serve is supposed to be their logo.
Well, like their motto, like I say, I'm dumbfounded. And when you listen to that tape, after some of the responses they made, you heard nothing but dead air from me because I was just astounded. Yeah. Like,
Crowell, I wanted you to quickly jump in and actually give your opinion on all this, what's happening, because you went to foster care. You were actually in foster care growing up. What is your outlook on what we're talking about right now?
Well, you know, when I was taken away from my mother, I became ward of the courts. And the first group home they put us in, it subjected a lot of the First Nations girls who went through there to sexual abuse, not only from the father, but from the son. And my sister she got abused from them too. And she was actually going to do something about it, but unfortunately she died like 6-7 years ago. And she started talking to the Aboriginal, Native Police Liaison. They got dismantled down here because a lot of our people were starting to come forward, and they were working with a lot of the missing and murdered women's families. So, you know, with the connection that the Native Police Liaison was making with our people down here, I don't know, they dismantled them anyways. So they don't exist down here anymore. And my sister had gone to them and started opening up about a lot of this to them.
Well, isn't it amazing how, you know, when you start to make headway and exposing the corruption and everything, the next thing you know that all of a sudden the, the doors start to be shut. You know, so it's basically what happens is that what we're seeing is that they're putting this face on, oh, we're gonna do all this investigation, we're gonna expose all this stuff. And the next thing you know, when they start exposing stuff, they start shutting the door more and more and
They start doing a lot of cover-up. But, my sister used to keep in touch with the foster parents, and she would call them at least once a month. Didn't matter what time of the month it was. And she started getting a little freaky and paranoid near the end before she died. She came in and was talking to me, and she said the walls have ears and eyes, and she started writing things down, and she was afraid of the police. She said she got picked up for no reason, and she'd go to court, and you know, the judge would just throw things they would just let her go. And then she started talking about having nightmares about, you know, the sexual abuse. And she was actually going to do something against them, you know, for what had happened when she was in care. And another story is, too, about the police. You know, when I tried to stop them from beating up some guy. They were actually beating him up. They had him down on the ground, kicking him and everything. And they actually took me for a ride. You know, there's two parts to a paddy wagon. There's that big space, and then there's that smaller space with the bents. They handcuffed me and put me in there and took me for a ride. And it wasn't to the police station. It was under a bridge. So, you know, I'm quite... You know, I'm starting to wake up and realize that a lot of what we went through, and there was also neglect in a second group home we were in. And, you know, because of all this neglect, there was a fire a week before Christmas and four kids died. So I don't have a lot of trust or faith in the system, with the police, with the welfare system, with anything, because I think somehow they work together and they do a mass cover-up with a lot of these things that go on. You know, look, the Picton Farm is a prime example of that, and the residential schools, you know, our kids went to.
And also, Wes, with that, I want to ask you exactly how this sergeant, this superintendent was actually, you know, gave you a gigantic lecture after talking, because that falls right in line with what Carol's saying here.
Well, it didn't matter what I said. I was wrong. It was always, I kept referring them back to that paperwork, and they kept telling me, well, there's no evidence. What do you mean there's no evidence? And then I heard, they led me down this path, and I talked for a long time about one particular incident, the boy that got punched in the head by the staff member. And I go through this whole history of it all, and then they go, well, that's basically all fine and well, but 2 years ago, he jumped off the Granville Street Bridge and killed himself. So no witness, no crime. Yet it's all over the paperwork. No witness, no crime. So the individual that did it, who is now still working in that psych ward, and he has been promoted, didn't commit a crime, and he gets to stay there and work with these kids? You've got to be joking. And I'm looking at this, and again, I'm dumbfounded. It's like, are you people for real? So that makes it okay. That means it never happened. It doesn't exist. And this individual that shouldn't be near kids gets to stay there.
So what we're talking about, paperwork, we're talking about medical reports, we're talking about government reports, we're talking about paperwork done within the institution itself and any other paperwork that's done on the children that we're talking about.
Well, that particular punch, there would be incident reports. There has to be. And they had actually had an internal review of the whole thing, and they actually asked people. Now, there were people that were actually trying to help him cover it up, and this particular man even comes up to me and says, they're saying I punched a guy in the head. I don't think I punched him in the head, so how come everyone that was standing there watching said you did? How come first you admitted and now you're trying to soften it that you didn't? And the interesting thing is, I'm standing on a unit, and the supervisor, we're having a conversation in the office, and he goes after a kid. The kid's losing his temper. He's getting a little bit uptight. This guy doesn't know how to restrain properly. It's dangerous. And instead of talking to the kid, he immediately grabs him. And it got pretty stupid. So I have to run from the office and intervene and settle the whole thing down. The supervisor looks at him and says, you got to quit doing this stuff because I can't keep covering up for you. I can't keep bailing you out.
And also, 2 weeks ago, we had Dan here. Again, he was a survivor of the Maple Center. And Carol, I'll just quickly bring you up to date on this. What happened was Dan was talking about there was 81 deaths within the foster care system. Yet, if you take a look, what I look through my paperwork, I've only come up with about maybe 20. Maybe add on another 10, maybe 20 with one look through Wes's stuff. So, I mean, that's 40 over 40 children that are unaccountable. What's your comment on that?
Well, you know, exactly the same thing that reflects back to the residential school. The 50,000 kids who died and went missing there, they haven't been accounted for. So, you know, when you do mass cover-up, you just have to look at the system and see there's something terribly wrong here. Someone was telling me at the First United Church they were when they started building the parking lot that there were kids' bodies found there, but I don't remember hearing anything about that in the news or anything. So you know they do mass cover up. And you know what? It's scary, and if people don't start listening and don't start paying attention, I'm a sane person. I have children. I have things to worry about because I know what could happen. Because, you know, the things that happened to me, and these are very vulnerable children. You know, when you put them in the hands of someone to make sure that they're safe and that they're okay, I mean, there's something horribly wrong with our system. It's like, why are so many kids dying and going missing? Why are they doing mass cover-up? And people who are in those power of position are doing something horribly wrong. And it's time for us to speak out. It's time for us to listen. It's time for us to do something about it. You know, pay attention to what is being said. This is the real news. It's not CBC and it's not NBC or Global. We don't filter out what we don't want people to hear. This is the real truth about what is happening out there.
Yeah, so true. Actually, Wes, what happens is you were talking about the Solicitor General's office when you actually went in to talk to him. Could you talk about who that person was and what was said and how they tried to cover up what you were trying to tell them?
Well, it was interesting because the first Solicitor General I approached was Rich Coleman. And I even phoned in a couple years later to CKNW, and I basically confronted him on the air about it. And I said, you turtled. When I came and spoke with you, you turtled. Of course, I get cut off. I go to commercial and come back, and I'm not on the air anymore. So Rich gets to explain why I didn't turtle, and he softens it up, and it's done. I walked into Rich Coleman's office, and when I first came in, he was glad-handing me, the typical politician, like, good to see you, buddy. Vote for me, vote for me. Then I said, I'm here about the Maples. He goes, was that in Maple Ridge? And I said, no, it's the youth psych ward in Burnaby. And as soon as I said that, his face went pale, and he took off. I got to go. And he went and hid in his back office. And that's against the law. That's the top cop. Now, understand that I am nowhere near a cop basher. But I will do is tell the truth and tell what I see. In fact, as a kid, one of my fondest memories I have is we had a pretty incredible hockey team one year, and our sponsor was the RCMP. And the three coaches, all RCMP officers, great guys, treated us like $1 million. One of my favorite memories, especially around sports, you know, those guys treated us like we were something. They were great in the community. They were, and there are good ones out there, but unfortunately, we got some problems, and you address it. And it's interesting because we keep going back to the Danny Perot stuff, Youth Detention Center, and the Serena Fry. Now, people say, well, that's historical.
And also, we have to remember at the same time, when Dan was sitting there 2 weeks ago, he was talking about a young lady who also committed suicide by the name of Sasha.
That's right. So when we go back historically, that stuff was all on paper as we're holding the paperwork now. But it's really interesting because... And this statement I'm about to read is just a liberal leader. This is when they're in opposition. It says the opposition panned the action. It was about the NDP not following through on an investigation into the Danny Perot stuff. He's the young man that was let out when he shouldn't have been let out, and he raped and molested a woman and threatened to kill her. Gordon Hogue, who was the first liberal MLA, Children and Families Minister, when the liberals got in, was a guy in charge of that detention center when this all happened. He was named in this. Gordon Campbell says, in opposition, they said, Attorney General Colin Gableman has failed to hold himself accountable for the system he is responsible for. The message it sends is we are going to go after the people, not the problem, Campbell said. This is a symptom of a system that is in trouble and is not going to create a sense of public security. He should recognize he has some responsibility and call a full and open inquiry into the corrections branch. Okay. They already have policies and procedures in place. The manual is big as all get out. It's these errors, and the person that basically is responsible or had a play or hand in this that was named in all this paperwork is his first Children and Families Minister, the man who got removed from that position. And so basically you can say even back then he's protecting his future cabinet member. The policies and procedures are in place. It breaks down when staff start changing the rules. And you say, well, that's too strict and too stringent. Well, part of those rules are is you don't abuse children. You don't hurt them. You protect them.
Well, that's what foster care system is supposed to be for.
It's supposed to be nurturing. It's supposed to be caring. How do you nurture and care for a kid when you punch him in the head? And when they tell me the kid that got punched in the head and they say, oh, he jumped off the bridge. Okay, so as an adult, he jumps off a bridge. Do you think things like punching him in the head as a kid helped? Stop him from doing that? It certainly didn't help.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll throw in a PA and a song, and then we'll come back with more from Carol, Wes, myself, and Molly will probably jump in too. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO, Hidden from History, and we'll be back in a second. Welcome back to Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Hidden from History. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. Hello, caller. Are you there, caller? Okay, it looks like... Anyway, Wes, are you there, caller? Wes, do you want to continue on talking about Rich Coleman?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because when I talk about tampering with some of these cases, and I go back to all of a sudden conveniently I get a call just before the election. If we don't think this stuff happens,
I hate to interrupt you, Wes, okay. Again. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller.
Greetings. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Greetings.
Yeah, you wanted to say some comments?
Yes, I want to open your mind to the big picture. Hello?
Go ahead.
There is an extraterrestrial conspiracy to manipulate humanity to self-destruction.
What happens, we just had, this show is on the children. What happens is we would like to focus right now on the foster care system. We don't really wish to get into that subject at this time, maybe a later program. So if you have any comments on the foster care system, you can go ahead. If you don't, then, you know, have a nice day, and you can call into another show that they're doing that comment on.
Yeah, I was going to say, Reg, I think I saw that movie.
I think it was E.T. Call Home.
I'm not sure. But regardless, yeah, Rich Coleman, he, during the BC Rail stuff, the fact-finding mission that they had, and of course this thing's been dragging for years, there was comment that there was concerns that Rich, who was a former officer, had given direction as Solicitor General to make sure that no cabinet ministers were investigated. So if we don't think this happens, it's interesting what's poking around that BC Rail trial and some of the fact-finding that they were digging up in the start. It's funny how we never hear about that stuff again. But
well, there's an awful lot of stuff that also the NDP did at the same time that we're not hearing that much about, too.
It's a mirror.
So, I mean, they're both exact same. Same with social credit. So it's like every party within British Columbia that's been in power within the last, I would probably say, 40 years has had some form of corruption that they're trying to hide.
Well, sure. I mean, look no further than fudged budgets. They've all done it.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, and some of the things that I saw, I mean, I even spoke with them about, there was a young girl that was out late at night from the Maple. She was 15 years old, and she was up on Hastings Street, and she was scared. She's by a little convenience store. She'd been AWOL, and so she phoned and says, I need a ride. And I said, well, and long and short, I sent the police to go pick her up. I'm trying to deal with the police when she comes back. There's an older officer and a younger officer. The older officer is standing back several steps away. He wants nothing to do with this. I'm trying to get the girl away from that younger officer because he's giving her, and understand, he's delivering this girl who is a resident at the provincial psychiatric ward doing an assessment. She's having an assessment done on her. We obviously are the people that are responsible for her at the time. We're the ones that are working with this kid. He found it was important to make sure he gave her his work phone number, his home phone number, and his cell phone number. And everyone's too scared to say anything, so I had to step in. The night we had a judge, one of the highest ranking judges this province has ever seen, breaching our security. Again, people were too scared to say anything. He's bringing kids in to visit one of the most, how do I put it, the most dangerous youth we have in this province. And he's a great kid. It's just every now and then, if you don't work with him properly or a staff triggers something, he will lose his temper. You just got to know how to work with him. Read his notes, read his case, you know.
So with Rich Coleman, I mean, how was he also tied in with did he have something to do with the Olympics and also, you know, other current events within British Columbia?
Rich Coleman?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, he's your housing minister now, and he's your casino, you know, the gambling minister, what have you. And, of course, when the Liberals were in opposition, it was gambling is bad, this is terrible. You got Kevin Kruger, people like that saying this is bad, it's going to be the demise of our province, it's going to wreck families. And, well, once you're in that door, and so now we got the NDP saying this is a bad thing. Now, whether you like it or not, the point being is make your mind up, people.
And also, Carol, you have some points you want to share with us because you have other commitments you want to take care of right after you say some stuff?
Well, you know, what you're talking about all ties down right to the residential schools when they're doing cover-ups. A lot of the records were destroyed. So a lot of people applying for the common experience payment, there are certain times of their year when they were there that now they're when they apply for their settlement, they're saying, oh no, you were only here, there, and there. So now a lot of them have had to have friends or someone sign affidavits saying they were there. So, you know, they do destroy records, they do destroy evidence that proves something. And so I find that a lot of our residential school survivors, when they were kids, you know, it was a crazy-making system, you know, where, you know, a lot of them were, And even when they were sexually abused, they're doubting them. And here you had the government get up and apologize for the churches and what they did to the kids who went to residential school. And now I find some of the residential school survivors being doubted for the sexual abuse, saying, oh, it was in your head, oh, you're crazy, or, you know, and the system's really good about that. And so now people have only till 2012 to apply, and a lot of them don't even know about the second part of the residential school settlement. And so what you're talking about makes sense. I understand, and it's all interconnected right down to where residential school kids were. And there was also a place called the Woodlands, where it was a psychiatric ward, where a lot of these kids, when they were in care there, were dealing with sexual abuse. So, you know, you talk about mass cover-up. It's people who work in the system. And these policies, the policies are not there to protect us. Those policies that are there to protect them.
Yeah, and I find that, how does a guy actually, a staff member who's supposed to be a trained counselor, commit assault and they protect him? That's against the law. The law should be superseding what happens in there in any union contracts or what have you. Now, when I spoke with our union representative in there, he says, oh, no, you can't say anything because those are your brothers and sisters, your union brothers and sisters. And I said, hold it. Those aren't brothers and sisters of mine if this is how they're treating kids. And so it's pretty bent, it's pretty warped. But one thing I learned a long time ago is, and I had an editor of a newspaper, I'm holding photographs of conditions of foster care. I spoke about this before, but I'm standing there. He's the same guy who was a moderator at one of the federal MPs' public meetings. I got up behind the microphone and the place blew up. People were screaming and yelling and telling me that's right. And the place went, it was out of control. You got all these politicians there sweating, and the actual politician that was hosting that forum, it was his office that said, oh, well, maybe you should go contact Oprah Winfrey about this. It's his district. These are photos of conditions in his community. So the editor that was moderator, I went and saw him a couple of days later. And he started lecturing me, started yelling at me, and he refused to look at the pictures. But the point I was trying to drive home is he kept trying to tell me, oh, you're making it sound like some kind of conspiracy. And I said, you know, I never use those words because as soon as you use conspiracy and cover up and corruption, all of a sudden you're in a spot where it just discredits everything. And so I always make the reference that this is just a bunch of people doing things they shouldn't be doing.
So what we're talking about on this show, I'd like to basically say to our listening audience again, is we're exposing the truth that a few wish to hide in regards to how the foster care system has been corrupt to the core for many years here in the province of British Columbia, and a lot of children are being affected. We're not talking one or two. We're talking possibly up to hundreds, maybe even into the thousands. They're being affected. Now, these are children. And everyone out there that you got your own family, you know what? Look at the picture of your family tonight and ask yourself, what would you do if your child was abused? What would you do if your child was beaten up? What would you do to protect your child? You know what? And the people out there that say that, you know, it's only the children, you know, forget about it. Go on with your life. You know what I say to these people? I say, you know what? I seriously question your soul because of the fact is the children are our future. What kind of future do we want to give the world? What kind of future do we want to basically present to the world that's coming out of this nation of Canada with the First Nation, the Native Americans and the non-Native Americans? What kind of future do we want to provide everyone here? I'd love to provide a future where we all get along, where we all share equally. What about you, Wes?
Well, when you listen to Carol's stories, this isn't somebody that said, I heard it from. This is an actual witness. This is someone that had to live through this nightmare. Working with the kids, and it's interesting, especially because that psych ward, that's the last stop for kids in the province of BC when they can't get help anywhere else. And it can be something simple as just a 28-day assessment. How can we help this child deal with loss, what have you? But for the most part, that's it. That's the last place to go. How can the place that's supposed to be the top of the pile be so dysfunctional for 40 years? And we know it because it's in the papers, there's hints and sniffs, and then it gets buried. Nobody goes any further with it. And so when you hear stories from Carol and she's talking about this and the sexual abuse, you don't need to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist to recognize the patterns and the signs. And sometimes we hire the right paper, not the right people. The people that have to live through it and see it, that's where your answers are. There was a principal in this province, Robert Noyes, I believe. And the abuse that came through that community, to this day, we're paying for it, because the people that it was done to, their children are showing up in the system now. And they're coming from those exact same communities. And it's a roadmap. It's a pattern. It's got to be broken.
Carol, you want to jump in and say a couple words?
Well, I was just thinking, a lot of the girls who ended up in the group home usually end up on the street. They usually end up on the street at a very young age. And a lot of the young boys who do go through the system, there's always that need to control. And they put them on things like Ritalin. And it's like, I know I'm helping some of the moms throughout the years. It's like, why do they always want to control? If the kids are too hyper, they say, they use so much words to label, the English words is used to help oppress our people. So I'm just thinking, they're conditioning and brainwashing our kids at a certain age when they're in group homes. And a high percentage of those kids who do go into the foster care or the system usually end up on the street.
How many actually do you see down here in East Hastings?
Do you know
that have been from the basically foster care system?
There is a high percent. I'm not accurate on the percentage, but you can see the younger generation, and the younger they are, there's a lot of them who are ending up down here.
And you're working with a lot of these females at this time.
Yeah, yes, and you know what? And a lot of them are. Have been through either residential school or through foster care, and a high percentage of the kids, girls who were in foster care, have turned to the streets and are using drugs, and a lot of the young guys that I see who were apprehended at very young ages, and you know the system is not set up to help our people. There is nothing there's nothing good about the system right now. You go down to the courtrooms, you'll see a high percentage of our young moms. And sometimes sometimes the moms don't even make it to court. You see all the different ages, from very young babies to youth. And a lot of our youth are committing suicide. You see up in the Hazleton area there, you know, there's a high percentage of youth who are committing suicide. And there are a lot of kids. My cousin, her daughter was part of that. There was a thing on Facebook about a bunch of young girls, and these are 12, 13-year-olds who made a pact, you know, to commit suicide at a certain time. And so my cousin took action right away and sent her daughter down here to the Delta area there, just to get away from all that. So what is happening? What is happening with our kids? What is happening I don't even know what to say. We need a solid, structured system that really projects out and filters out a lot of these pedophiles who they do exist in the system.
Well, you're seeing Native Americans and non-Native Americans, you know, they're suffering. But actually, in the foster care system, as Wes has pointed out to me, and as I keep on finding, there is predominantly more Native Americans within the foster care system than non-Native Americans. But, you know, at the same time, the non-Native Americans that are there, they're suffering just as bad, too.
Yeah.
So what we have to do is we have to set up a system. We have to get the leaders together, get the hereditary chiefs, get the people from the non-Native American communities, different ethnical groups together, the leaders, and let's start setting up a real system, because the system we have right now has only been set up by a few people, and these few people have an idea where they're going to start making money off everything. They're creating the problem of the future, whereby the child ends up in jail, and then they're making more and more money off of a child, whereas if the child was learned how to be productive and part of society in a positive way, then what happens is that could have been a very beneficial towards society itself. That's what I'd like to say.
You know what?
I think Molly has a couple of things she wants to say, too. You want to say something, Molly?
Yeah, I like what you're saying, Reg. I think you'd be a great father. It's so true that the passing on of compassion as happens from parent to child, not... I don't want to put my kids in a daycare and have someone else raise them. It goes right back to really learning from your kids, too, because having kids reminds you of all the things we take for granted, but it takes you down to this simple place where you You need food, water, and love, and a sense of belonging. And I think that if a belonging were a heart, like if you imagine a diagram of a heart and two sides to it, one would be the unconditional love would need to be part of your sense of belonging, and the other side of it is to feel special and have an identifying quality that your family says, you know, this is what's special about you, this is why we love you. And those are things that I think a family can do or friends can do for a human. But when you're putting them through a system, they're not getting those ties, they're not learning trust, and they're not getting that camaraderie of, you know, we need you here because we love you, you're really good at making us laugh, you're really good at singing, you're really good at football, you know, those things brought through your entire adolescence and up all the rocky times and all the swollen hormone times and all the times that you are going to need guidance in your life. You need family to be there for you. And when you have someone who's being paid to be family, a foster care family that might be great, and I know there are great foster cares, but a lot of people have dollar signs in their eyes when they take on the role of a foster parent. And it's just a priority shift, and we're racing for a dollar, and we're all looking closely at our behaviors. I think it's gonna be okay, I'd like to hope, but it all comes down to family. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, thank you so much there, Molly. I totally agree with you, and what happens is, you know, we're going to have to start looking. I think in order to make positive changes in society, we're going to have to start looking at the leaders within the different communities, because that's where we're going to have to start leaning on, because right now we don't have that base. And Wes, you wanted to add a couple things?
Well, it all comes down to leadership again, top down. And when you actually, those policies and procedures are in place for a reason. I remember years ago, I was asked a question. They said, if your supervisor, it was during an interview, they said, if your supervisor told you to do something and you knew it was wrong, what would you do? And it was one of those moments in my life where everything slowed down. And I'm just kind of staring at the guy going, if I knew what kind of guy you were, I could answer it the way you want. Because the question, it's loaded. You can either say, well, I would do what I was told. And then they go, well, he's a good working guy. Or I could say that, no, that's wrong. And it all depends on the philosophy of the person sitting across from you. And I find that in this system, here's all these policies and procedures, and here's how it's supposed to be done, we're told, and this is the clinical background on it. Yet, it's a free-for-all. In that psych ward, it's unbelievable. It's just to see what's in there. And just to make a note from something earlier, Reg, during the Serena Frye stuff, there was an article in the Vancouver Province, February 24th, 1994. Salim Jiwa, I believe is how you say their name. The Burnaby RCMP Staff Sergeant, Mike Eastham, said he was shocked when he read the girl's diary. Indicates she was in utter despair. Now you got the Fred Bannon, who was a director of Youth Forensic Psychiatric Service there, runs the Maples, said there had been no indication she was suicidal. So again, we're sitting here looking. Everybody knows. The public may not know this as well, but these people all know that there have been concerns in there since time began, and it hasn't changed, because if it's changed, we wouldn't be sitting here right now.
I hate to interrupt you there, Wes. We have a caller on the line. Actually, we have Kevin Kelso. Hello, Kevin.
Hi. My question was that actually I'm looking into getting involved with the foster parent program myself, because I think it's important that people use their lives and what they're blessed with to make a difference and to give back to the world. I want to get involved with the program, but I want to know, you know, how can I stay away from the corruption, and what can I do to make a difference?
One of the first things you need to do, Kevin, is to make sure that they disclose everything, all the issues around the child, because a lot of times they'll place a kid in care and they won't tell you all the concerns, all the diagnosis, all the issues that they struggle with. And if you're not prepared for it, it can actually, and then when I say destroy your home, I'm not saying destroy the actual walls and stuff that could come, but the dynamics of your own family. So make sure you've got all the information so then you're prepared to go in. Now, there are companies that are contracted, and then they, in turn, contract out to you. A lot of people prefer to go direct government contracts, but again, there were some programs the government had, and they were actually, and this was a job employment program. So what they did is they actually bought out the contracts for the companies that were doing it, and there's still time to go on the contracts. And they renewed all the contracts, but unfortunately, I can't tell you the statistics or exactly the companies, but then they reassigned a lot of these contracts to political friends, we'll call it. And we see this often, patronage and what have you. So the question you asked is, yeah, make sure you go in understanding that a lot of times the kids that they're going to send to you, they're not going to be kids that are just run-of-the-mill. There's going to be some other underlying issues there.
Well, thank you very much for helping me with that. So you think I should still try to move forward and get involved, or is it going to be too much?
Well, no, it's always on an individual, and just coming in with that kind of a spirit, I mean, you're halfway there already. Understand that there's a lot of foster parents, the really good ones, when they see something that's not right and they speak up, a lot of them are scared to say it, because if they do, they could very well, they could lose the children, their life becomes pretty difficult. And we've seen this over and over in the newspapers. We saw it coming to Prince George. It was a pretty interesting story. One of the ladies up there, she actually stood up and said, you know what, you can't be doing this. And the government pretty much, it cost her.
Well, I'm not one who's ever been afraid to speak out and call a spade when I see it. I hope that doesn't cost me. But I also want to point out that this has been a great show. I'm glad that Reg had you on, and I'm going to archive it, and as well as the show that was on before this one, on my website. So I'll just let everyone know what that website is. It's axiomatica.org.
Axiomatica?
Yep.
Now, there's Reg, this is our fifth show, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the fifth one.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
So we're there.
Yeah, we're almost, we have basically a couple more shows before Kevin Nanette comes back. But also I wanted to quickly add there, Kevin and Wes, that what happens is that I know some people within the foster children. And, you know, I've heard some of the tales where some of the people they've had placed with them, you know, one was basically a young child that was being abused by someone who was in their 40s, and there was a father involved, and it just reached a point where, you know, basically it sickened me right to the core, because some people will look at, they'll look at religion and they'll start to go to religion and stuff, but however, this story actually involved a person involved with organized religion. And I guess that's why it sort of turned me away from religion a little bit, because when someone's preaching something and then behind closed doors they're allowing something else to happen to their own child, I look at that right off the bat saying that's wrong. You should be standing up for your child. You should be protecting your child. And this father wasn't protecting his child.
But one thing that's interesting, Reg, there's a big difference between religion and faith.
And a gigantic difference.
And there's a wonderful saying that the Catholic community has, St. Francis Assisi. He says, preach the gospel, use words if you have to. And I'll say that often to people, and I'll say, do you know what that means? And they'll kind of look at me a bit, you know, and I'll say, you know, in my eyes, that means I don't want to hear how great you are anymore. I want to see it. And just with this caller hearing, his goal is to roll his sleeves up and do it. And yeah. When you hear somebody, and you know, I've picked my summer students, and I didn't want the ones that are going to, you know, kowtow. I want the ones who are going to tell the truth and be honest, and if something's not right, to call it. Because that's usually the ones you want in the room. As long as they're fairly well grounded, then chances of these things happening aren't going to happen, because it's pretty hard to intimidate someone like that.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left. Thank you for calling in there, Kevin. I wanted to quickly go ahead and talk about, right with the Abbotsford Police. Oh. About 5 years ago, you were involved with a community service. Could you talk a little bit about that? We only have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to end on that note.
Yeah. In my office, one of the highest ranking cops in the district.
This is in Abbotsford.
In Abbotsford. And I tell you, my eyes started opening. And Abbotsford's an absolute nightmare. It's in the paper all the time. I mean, about 1999, they had a little kid's birthday party, so they decided they're going to do a drug bust on the house. The cops rush in, kick the doors, whatever they did. They get in there, and there's the family dog barking at them, getting angry with them. So they shoot and kill the dog in front of a bunch of little children at a birthday party. So, I mean, they got a long history of these types of things. In fact, one of the officers, Joey Thompson, a couple of years ago, she wrote an article about they had dropped a guy off at the Abbotsford Hospital, and he had psychiatric concerns, and he went missing. So they phoned the police department. It took them 3 hours to come. Now, they can say it's not our responsibility to be looking for a guy around the hospital, but they came, and they eventually found him, and he had killed himself. The key in that article was that was written was that the officer who called said, I'm sick and tired of this. Every day we have nothing but problems in this police department. They mess up every day, and it gets covered up, and no one's accountable. So in my office, I'm sitting there. I had a person on my caseload, and, well, they didn't do a single requirement of their court order as far as my office was concerned. So I breached them. The time was up. Expiry date came up. I breached them. I get a phone call saying, take the paperwork back. I said, well, why would I do that? And I said, who's behind this? Did the judge approve? They said, no, but you're going to take it anyway. And so they start telling, and it's the high-ranking cop pulling strings through the probation office. I'm told to take the file back. So as my duties to the courts, I'm trying to report this, and the abuse was unbelievable. And it just kept coming. I got offered a position in the police department to keep my mouth shut. And you can say, oh, no, this is... I have letters from the solicitors, generals, reps, and attorneys, generals, reps saying what a ethical, honest, upright, what a great guy, you know, no one does it better kind of stuff.
What were the judges actually that was involved with this particular case? What were they trying to
judges, do? Judges didn't do anything. The judges didn't know about any of this because it was the back room stuff. And it was favors for favors because the guy, the cop, knew the guy that was... And so they gave him a project, and the project is directly related to the company that the cop's wife runs. And so I say, you're going to supervise. No, you're going to. And they're bullying me. So finally I wrote on my paperwork as directed by. And, of course, that didn't make them very happy either. So the time comes. I phone the house for the to see if he's actually done it, the imaginary expiry date. And his girlfriend, she says he hasn't done it. He's got no intentions of doing it. 2 hours later, I get a call from the cop saying the project's done. I can pick it up at his house. And I tell you, you know how much abuse I got over that? So I took other steps, and I put my name out there for something. I had the editor of the Abbotsford Times newspaper, Ken West, Gord Kurinoff. He wrote a letter talking about what a yo-yo I was for talking about concerns around the ethics in our police departments. Well, pick up your newspapers. You didn't need a crystal ball for it. It just happened to be in my office, and I'm being called a yo-yo for it. So when I walk into this Burnaby thing, they knew about the concerns that I had around the Abbotsford Police Department. They mentioned it, and it's like, what is this? When does this end? I'm in here to do the right thing, and I'm here to protect the children. And
It looks like we're out of time there, Wes, yep. But next week what we're going to do is we're going to continue this series, and next week we're going to start naming names of politicians here in British Columbia. And we might throw in a couple media names and a couple more police names at the same time. So I say to the listening audience out there, if you have any connections over to Bill Good, please have him listen in. I'm quite sure he'll quite enjoy what we have to say. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Hidden from History. This will be archived on www.hiddenfromhistory.org.